The Dark Eidolon, Clark Ashton Smith. Thassadon, Lord of Seven Hells, wherein the single serpent dwells, with volumes drawn from pit to pit, through fires and darkness infinite. Thassadon, son of nether skies, thine ancient evil never dies, for I, thy somber fugler's flame, on sunken worlds that have no name, man's heart enthrones thee, still supreme, though the false sorcerers blaspheme. Drawn from the Song of Zethra. On Zothtik, the last continent on earth, the sun no longer shone with the whiteness of its prime, but was dim and tarnished as if with a vapor of blood. New stars without number had declared themselves in the heavens, and the shadows of the infinite had fallen closer. And out of the shadows the older gods had returned to man, the gods forgotten since Hyperborea, since Mu and Poseidonis, bearing other names but the same attributes. And the elder demons had also returned, battening on the fumes of evil sacrifice and fostering again the primordial sorceries. Many were the necromancers and magicians of Zothtik, and the infamy and marvel of their doings was legend elsewhere in the latter days. But among them all, there was none greater than Namurra, who imposed his black yoke on the cities of Xylac, and later, in a proud delirium, deemed himself the veritable peer of Thassadon, Lord of Evil. Namurra had built his abode in Eumaos, the chief town of Xylac, to which he came from the desert realm of Tassun, with the dark renown of his thaumaturgies like a cloud of desert storm behind him. And no man knew that in coming to Eumaos he returned to the city of his birth, for all deemed him a native of Tassun. Indeed, none could have dreamt that the great sorcerer was one with the beggar boy Narthos, an orphan of questionable parentage, who had begged his daily bread in the streets and bazaars of Eumaos. Wretchedly had he lived, alone and despised, and a hatred of the cruel, opulent city grew in his heart like a smothered flame that feeds in secret, biding the time when it shall become a conflagration, consuming all things. Bitterer always, through his boyhood and early youth, was the spleen and rancor of Narthos toward men. And one day the prince Zotula, a boy but little older than he, riding a restive palfrey, came upon him in the square before the imperial palace, and Narthos implored an alms. But Zotula, scorning his plea, rode arrogantly forward, spurring the palfrey, and Narthos was ridden down and trampled under its hooves. And afterward, nigh to death from the trampling, he lay senseless for many hours, while the people passed him by unheeding. And at last, regaining his senses, he dragged himself to his hovel, but he limped a little thereafter all his days, and the mark of one hoof remained like a brand on his body, fading never. Later, he left Eumaos, and was quickly forgotten by its people. Going southward into Tassun, he lost his way in the great desert, and was near to perishing. But finally he came to a small oasis, where dwelt the wizard Ufalak, a hermit who preferred the company of honest jackals and hyenas to that of men. And Ufalak, seeing the great craft and evil in the starving boy, gave succor to Narthos and sheltered him. He dwelt for years with Ufalak, becoming the wizard's pupil and the heir to his demon-rested lore. Strange things he learned in that hermitage, being fed on fruits and grain that had sprung not from the watered earth, and wine that was not the juice of Tyrrheni grapes. And like Ufalak, he became a master in devildom, and drove his own bond with the archfiend Thassadon. When Ufalak died, he took the name Namurra, and went forth as a mighty sorcerer among the wandering peoples and the deep-buried mummies of Tassun. But never could he forget the miseries of his boyhood in Eumaos, and the wrong he had endured from Zotullah. And year by year he spun over in his thoughts the black web of revenge. And his fame grew darker and vaster, and men feared him in remote lands beyond Tasun. With bated whispers they spoke of his deeds in the cities of Yoros and in Zulbasser, the abode of the ghoulish deity Mordiggian. And long before the coming of Namura himself, the people of Umaos knew him as a fabled scourge that was direr than Simun, or pestilence. Now, in the years that followed the going forth of the boy Narthos from Umaos, Pithem, the father of Prince Zoltula, was slain by the sting of a small adder that had crept into his bed for warmth on an autumn night. Some said that the adder had been purveyed by Zotula, but this was a thing that no man could verily affirm. After the death of Pithem, Zotula, being his only son, was emperor of Xylac, and ruled evilly from his throne in Umaos. Indolent he was, and tyrannic, and full of strange luxuries and cruelties, but the people, who were also evil, acclaimed him in his turpitude. So he prospered, and the lords of hell and heaven smote him not. And the red suns and ashen moons went westward over Xylac, falling into that seldom-voyaged sea, which, if the mariners' tales were true, poured evermore like a swiftening river past the infamous Isle of Nat, and fell in a worldwide cataract upon nether space from the far, sheer edge of earth. Grosser still he grew, and his sins were as overswollen fruit that ripen above a deep abyss. But the winds of time blew softly, and the fruits fell not. And Zotula laughed amid his fools and his eunuchs and his lemans. And the tale of his luxuries was borne afar, and was told by dim outland people, as a twin marvel with the bruited necromancies of Namura. It came to pass, in the year of the hyena, and the month of the star Canicle, that a great feast was given by Zotula to the inhabitants of Umaos. Meats that had been cooked in exotic spices from Soltar, Isle of the East, were spread everywhere, and the ardent wines of Yoros and Xylac, filled as with subterranean fires, were poured inexhaustibly from huge urns for all. The wines awoke a furious mirth and a royal madness, and afterwards they brought a slumber no less profound than the lethe of the tomb. And one by one, as they drank, the revelers fell down in the streets, the houses, and gardens, as if a plague had struck them. And Zotula slept in his banquet hall of gold and ebony, with his old adisks and chamberlains about him. So, in all Umaos, there was no man or woman wakeful at the hour when Sirius began to fall toward the west. Thus it was that none saw or heard the coming of Namura. But wakening heavily in the latter forenoon, the emperor Zotula heard a confused babble, a troublous clamor of voices from such of his eunuchs and women as had awakened before him. Inquiring the cause, he was told that a strange prodigy had occurred during the night. But being still bemused with wine and slumber, he comprehended little enough of its nature, till his favorite concubine, Obexa, led him to the eastern portico of the palace, from which he could behold the marvel with his own eyes. Now the palace stood alone at the sitter of Umaos, and to the north, west, and south, for wide intervals of distance, there stretched the imperial gardens, full of superbly arching palms and loftily spiring fountains. But to eastward was a broad open area, used as a sort of common between the palace and the mansions of Hyoptimates. And in this space, which had lain wholly vacant at eve, a building towered colossal and lordly beneath the full-risen sun, with domes like monstrous fungi of stone that had come up in the night. And the domes, rearing level with those of Zotula, were builded of dead white marble, and the huge facade, with multi-column porticos and deep balconies, was wrought in alternate zones of night black onyx and porphyry hued as with dragon's blood. And Zotula swore lewdly, calling with hoarse blasphemies on the gods and devils of Xylac, and great was his dumbfoundment, deeming the marvel a work of wizardry. The women gathered about him, crying out with shrill cries of awe and terror, and more of his courtiers, awakening, came to swell the hubbub, and the fat castrados dittered in their cloth of gold like immense black jellies in golden basins. But Zotula, mindful of his dominion as emperor of all Xylac, strove to conceal his own trepidation, saying,
"Now who is this that has presumed to enter Eumos like a jackal in the dark, and has made his impious den in proximity and counterview of my palace? Go forth and inquire the miscreant's name, but ere you go, instruct the headsman to make sharp his double-handled sword."
Then, fearing the emperor's wrath if they tarried, certain of the chamberlains went forth unwillingly and approached the portals of the strange edifice. It seemed that the portals were deserted till they drew near, and then, on the threshold, there appeared a titanic skeleton, larger than any man of earth, and it strode forward to meet them with ell-long strides. The skeleton was swathed in a loincloth of scarlet silk with a buckle of jet, and it wore a black turban, starred with diamonds, whose topmost foldings nearly touched the high lintel. Eyes like flickering marsh fires burned in its deep eye sockets, and a blackened tongue, like that of a long-dead man, protruded between its teeth. But otherwise it was clean of flesh, and the bones glittered whitely in the sun as it came onward. The chamberlains were mute before it, and there was no sound except the golden creaking of their girdles, the shrill rustlings of their silks, as they shook and trembled. And the foot bones of the skeleton clicked sharply on the pavement of black onyx as it paused, and the putrefying tongue began to quiver between its teeth, and it uttered these words in an unctuous, nauseous voice.
"Return, and tell the Emperor Zotula that Namura, seer and magician, has come to dwell beside him."
Hearing the skeleton speak as if it had been a living man, and hearing the dread name of Namura as men hear the tocsin of doom in some fallen city, the chamberlains could stand before it no longer, and they fled with ungainly swiftness and bore the message to Zotula. Now, learning who it was that had come to neighbor with him in Eumaos, the emperor's wrath died out like a feeble and blustering flame on which the wind of darkness had blown, and the veinous purple of his cheeks was mottled with a strange pallor, and he said nothing, but his lips mumbled loosely, as if in prayer or malediction. And the news of Namura's coming passed like the flight of evil night-birds through all the palace and throughout the city, leaving a noisome terror that abode in Eumaos thereafter till the end. For Namura, through the black renown of his thaumaturges and dreadful entities who served him, had become a power that no secular sovereign dared dispute, and men feared him everywhere, even as they feared the gigantic, shadowy lords of hell and of outer space. And in Eumaos, people said that he had come on the desert wind from Tassoon with his underlings, even as the pestilence comes, and had reared his house in an hour with the aid of devils beside Zotula's palace. And they said that the foundations of the house were laid on the adamite cope of hell, and in its floor were pits at whose bottom burned the nether fires, or stars could be seen as they passed under in lowermost night. And the followers of Namura were the dead of strange kingdoms, the demons of sky and earth and the abyss, and mad, impious, hybrid things that the sorcerer himself created from forbidden unions. men shunned the neighborhood of his lordly house, and in the palace of Zotula few cared to approach the windows and balconies that gave thereon. And the emperor himself spoke not of Namura, pretending to ignore the intruder. And the women of the harem babbled evermore with an evil gossip concerning Namura and his concubines. But the sorcerer himself was not beheld by the people of that city, though some believed that he walked forth at will, clad with invisibility. His servitors were likewise not seen, but a howling as of the damned was sometimes heard to issue from his portals, and sometimes there came a strange chachination, as if some adamantine image had laughed aloud, and sometimes there was a chuckling, like the sound of shattered ice in a frozen hell. Dim shadows moved in the porticos, where there was neither sunlight nor lamp to cast them, and red, eerie lights appeared and vanished in the windows at eve, like a blinking of demonic eyes. And slowly the ember-colored suns went over Xylac, and were quenched in far seas, and the ashy moons were blackened as they fell nightly toward the hidden gulf. Then, seeing that the wizard had wrought no open evil, and that none had endured palpable harm from his presence, the people took heart. And Zotella drank deeply, and feasted in oblivious luxury as before. And dark Thassadon, prince of all turpitudes, was the true but never acknowledged lord of Xylac. And in time, the men of Eumaos bragged a little of Namura and his dread thaumaturgies, even as they had boasted of the purple sins of Zotula. But Namura, still unbeheld by living men and living women, sat in the inner walls of that house which his devils had reared for him, and spun over and over in his thoughts the black web of revenge, and the wrong done by Zotula to Narthos in old times was the least of those cruelties which the emperor had forgotten. Now, when the fears of Zotula were somewhat lulled, and his women gossiped less often of the neighboring wizard, there occurred a new wonder and a fresh terror. For sitting one eve at his banquet table, with his courtiers about him, the emperor heard a noise as of myriad iron-shod hoofs that came trampling through the palace gardens. And the courtiers also heard the sound, and were startled amid their mounting drunkenness. And the emperor was angered, and he sent certain of his guards to examine into the cause of the trampling. But peering forth upon the moon-bright lawns and parterres, the guards beheld no visible shape, though the loud sounds of trampling still went to and fro. It seemed as if a rout of wild stallions passed and repassed before the façade of the palace with tumultuous gallopings and capriolets, and a fear came upon the guards as they looked and listened, and they dared not venture forth, but returned to Zotella. And the emperor himself grew sober when he heard their tale, and he went forth with high blusterings to view the prodigy. And all night the unseen hooves rang out sonorously on the pavement of onyx, and ran with deep thuddings over the grasses and flowers. The palm fronds waved on the windless air as if parted by racing steeds, and visibly the tall-stemmed lilies and broad-petaled exotic blooms were trodden under. And rage and terror nested together in Zotula's heart as he stood in a balcony above the garden, hearing the spectral tumult and beholding the harm done to his rarest flower beds. The women, the courtiers, and eunuchs cowered behind him, and there was no slumber for any occupant of the palace. But, toward dawn, the clamor of hoofs departed, going toward Namura's house. When the dawn was full grown upon Eumaos, the emperor walked forth with his guards about him, and saw that the crushed grasses and broken-down stems were blackened as if by fire where the hoofs had fallen. Plainly were the marks imprinted, like the tracks of a great company of horses, in all the lawns and parterres. But they ceased at the verge of the gardens. and though everyone believed that the visitation had come from Nomura, there was no proof of this in the grounds that fronted the sorcerer's abode, for here the turf was untrodden,